But what I'd really like to do is something extraordinary.
Welcome back to The Ground Level. It's Sean, I'm your host. We got a special feature today, a very dear friend of mine, somebody I've known for over three decades. My friend Jevony is going to be joining us today. So let's get into it. Welcome back to The Ground Level again. Jevony, good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, Sean. Thank you for inviting me on to your show. And I love it, by the way.
We're going to be open and honest today. We did a quick little trial run and didn't realize that we were not recording. We're going to step over it because the audience here has missed some really quality material that we were really diving into. And what's so important to me about this is that everybody that knows me knows that I can be very sentimental, be it political, be it sociological, just even personal. Everything that you can think about, I really take it very deeply and personally. And Jevony is so important to me over these years. I mean, him and I are both 50 years old. And it's crazy when, you know, I sit here and watch my friend Jevony play a Super Mario's game with my 10-year-old son. And you're reliving these moments that we were spending hours and hours and hours of playing. Nikki and all that, but Jevony, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing lovely, man. I'm blessed, brother. I truly am blessed. 1 year, 1 month, and 1 day.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah, that, folks, that's so I'm September 16th, 1975. Jevony is August 15th, 1974.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty bizarre. I remember when we were talking about that when I was 11 years old and he was 12 years old, and we had these fun little, gosh, today, Jevony, we were just talking about how the things that I remember, and you probably have memories like that. It's strange the things that you remember and the things you can't remember, right?
Uh-huh.
But little conversations, like I remember when you and I were walking down, wasn't Westgate Boulevard, but what's the street? Was that Highland Hill Street? What is the street your parents live on?
Highlands Parkway.
And I remember you and I walking down the street, and it was midsummer. And I remember, you know, you're going through, you know, preteen years and puberty and all that kind of stuff. And I remember, as you remember, I wasn't a big kid.
Uh-huh.
I was kind of late growing up to everybody else. And I'm still not a big guy, but everybody was shooting up before me.
Uh-huh.
And I remember you and I walking in the sunlight. And we talked about this today where I was like, Jevony, look at the sunlight and our shadows, the way the sun hit our shadows. I was really bothered by the fact that my shoulders looked different than yours. And I was going, why do my shoulders look different than yours? It looked like yours is starting to develop and more than,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that conversation.
No, I don't.
And you probably don't. But it was like, it's again, what I was saying, it's just strange the things we remember that, you know, I remember walking to your folks' house and, you know, knocking on the door and, you know, your dad being asleep and upset if I was too loud and all that kind of stuff, right? Just great childhood memories.
Right.
And we were just before we hit record, mm-hmm. when we made, I will personally take that responsibility there. We were just knee deep into the subject of our parents were the same generation. You and I are both Gen X. Mm-hmm. There was something I believe inherently special about our generation. Now, I suppose every generation would say that, but I don't think, I would suggest that probably you go two generations before ours, they weren't thinking like that.
Oh, no, absolutely.
They were trying to
not.
Survive depression, all the changes of the country. It was, mm-hmm. we weren't focused on, man, we're here for change and hope and all this. It was,
right.
Fuck, how do I get by to the next meal, right?
Right.
And so then that generation, two before ours, then our parents' generation, the boomers.
Uh-huh.
And they were a significant part of the development of our country as far as this new open-mindedness, you know, the 60s and 50s and 60s and 70s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Then you and I came along, and Gen X was, I really believe, something special. You can't see anything since our generation that really mirrors that. And earlier we were talking about, my question to you was, what do you think? Let's focus on our fathers.
Mm-hmm.
you said it brilliantly earlier. So if we can recapture that moment, what do you think our fathers, you know, and we can talk about our mothers too, but specifically our fathers, what do you think that our fathers did right? And what did our fathers do wrong? And by wrong, I don't mean bad or evil or crooked, but what were their missteps?
That we want to do better with our kids. And I think we got the first half of that right, which is being present at work, going to work, being to work on time, having that great work ethic, you know, and ultimately making the sacrifices that we need, for our children in order for them to have a better life, you know. And when it starts, just like I said, being present at work, always working, always providing, you know, making sure that you have a roof over our heads, making sure you had a hot meal, making sure you had, you know, clothes on your back, just the basic essentials of fatherhood, which is what we are, providers. Now, the flip side of that was that our fathers in general, you know, well, at least with my father, didn't make time with us. My dad wasn't the one that to spend time with me like that, one-on-one, you know, to, you know, go out and watch my games or anything, participate in anything like that.
Right.
And so if I had to say, he wasn't like an encourager. Okay, like I you remember we played basketball together. Back in those days. That was a passion of mine. Your father played more basketball with me than my dad in front of your house.
That's right.
You know, like your father did that. You know what I mean? Yeah. He would challenge me and take me, whereas my dad wouldn't. And as far as it as a being a focus or a passion of mine, my father didn't embrace it. You know, he didn't. I remember watching your dad play tennis with you out on the court. You know, out there, right there at the tennis racket club and everything, whatever.
Oh, Highland Hill. That's right. Highland Hills.
My dad, you know, that wasn't his thing. So, you know, if there was ever a takeaway that I have in my, you know, I would, for me, it was being more involved with my son in whatever he was passionate about, because that was the biggest takeaway I ever had. That was the biggest takeaway I ever, you know, took from my childhood carrying over into my being a fatherhood right now.
And I think you hit home on something. You know, I look back too, because I can tell you where.
Just to echo this though, my dad is not a bad man.
No, he was a strict dude.
Just remember that though.
Because I mean, my memories of your dad, he was every time I was at your house, he was so kind to me.
Right.
It was always inviting, you know, and it was just, hey, Sean, how you doing? Even as I became, you know, I got back from the military, or you know, randomly I'd drop by and see your folks and but he was always so inviting and happy to see me.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly I had a different experience with your dad.
Right.
And as you did with mine,
mm-hmm.
because when you were around, my dad was out there, you know, having fun with you.
Right.
My dad was, if you remember, I mean, you remember you and I always see each other's dads from our point of view.
Right, you're right.
Not in the house.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, it's different dynamic.
And I, if you recall, I was adopted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my mom was my mom, but my dad adopted me when I was small. And I became, you know, Sean Hazel because he was Dave Hazel and all that kind of stuff. But the point was, is that his approach to me was never. He made time for me as far as like just being in my routine life, but there was, and again, this is not bashing our fathers.
This
is me pointing out where, because of the things that lacked by our fathers, I think you would agree that we're trying to take approach with our kids.
Right.
We always try, and maybe our sons will go, shit, Sean and Jevony, they were great dads, but here's where they failed.
Right.
And failure isn't necessarily a negative thing. It's no. This was lacking. Mm-hmm. And I mean, God, you know how many hours I work.
Right.
I mean, my God, I'm just constantly right. working. But every waking moment is my kids.
Right.
And I've taken, you know, as the boys, you know, I got three sons, and as they've gotten older over the years, I've taken a step back and gone, okay, why is my approach to these three different than my dad's was?
Mm-hmm.
My dad was just, nah, just work. Go get right. a job. Work right. your ass off. Work.
Right.
Okay, you got to provide. Work.
Right, right,
there was
right.
no, you got to be
there was
involved.
No middle ground, you know, with I mean? Those guys. There was no middle ground.
No, and there was an emotional detachment, but I don't fault him for it, probably because of his parents.
Right.
You know, that generation of the golden era. There right. was no emotional attachment from, I mean, I guess you and I are going to have to use our imagination, but it seems like there wasn't that emotional attachment
right,
of,
right.
you know, hey, how are you doing today? How right. how was your, did anybody mess with you? Hey, do you need my help? There was none of that, I would imagine, from my dad's parents, right?
Right.
It was, you know, fuck you. This life sucks.
Yeah,
you know,
this
you got
is
the,
what
you're coming
is,
out
yeah.
of the World War II era.
But they,
and all
they
that.
Were, but they were more. That generation was more, they just gave it to you. They didn't care. They gave you the straight dope. Look, this said it. This is what it is. Pay your bills, pay your taxes, and everything is everything.
Get out of my way.
Get out of my house. You know what I'm saying? Hey, you just like anything, like with our, look, there was no such thing as being a short order cook within the family dynamic. Like, look, you eat what I eat. Here it is. They lay it on the ground for you. You eat. We're not separating the two. You know, we're not cooking anything special for you. You're just going to eat what we eat.
Isn't that strange? And then you think of our kids when you say, here's what, well, I don't like that. And then we go, oh, well.
I'll make you something else.
Isn't that weird?
Because no, it's not for me, because my
I didn't
son
have
ate
the option.
What I ate.
Oh, okay.
And see, I didn't have that option either. But my son knows this to this day. Oh, Dad, I don't want. Oh, well, I guess you're going to be starving.
Now, see, okay, and hats off.
You're just going to be starving. Like, well, you want to eat or not?
Well, and that's great to hear, because maybe that's a failure on our part, because when you hear, yeah, but I don't like onions. Okay, well, we'll change it. And, you know, it's like, it just, I guess, to a certain degree shows how affluent as Americans we are, maybe.
Mm.
How privileged we are to give you the option.
Right.
Because I've told my sons, my two older ones, and you know them, when I've had a conversation with them about I'm upset with them, or, you know, hey, what are your feelings? What's going on now? And I think I'm pretty sure on the same page, is that I know that you and I give a luxury to our boys that we didn't have to a certain degree.
No, we spoil them.
As we try to talk to him at the bare minimum, go, well, look, I know my dad didn't talk to me.
Right.
It was, you know, when I would go, Dad, I mean, you remember high school. It was high school. My last couple of years were pretty rough for me.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no way, I didn't know how to communicate that to my dad.
Right.
So on a personal level, I know myself how tough that was. And then I'm applying that to my boys.
Right.
Where they're not having problems. Let me ask you this.
Shoot, go ahead.
And forgive me, because I know I'm rambling here, but here's my, I go things, I couldn't talk to my dad about things, maybe on a psychological level, because I was afraid to, I didn't know how to, puberty, all that, adolescence, all that shit, right? And then I think, now here, I'm going overboard by going, hey, is everything okay? Because you can talk to me, you can tell me anything,
right?
You know, and it's like, and the boys are going, Dad, I'm fine, what are you talking about? You know, and it's like, do you think that approach has its positive and negatives? I mean, because I wonder sometimes now, they're older now, but I'm afraid sometimes I made them paranoid of the world by going, are you okay? Is everything all right?
Well, you know, my opinion of that is just basically based off of this. Because we didn't receive that like that. Because we didn't know how to communicate with our fathers like that. So in changing that dynamic, what happens is that, yeah, we come through with the overbearing questions. But what I find in that is that you got to realize they were from a different era, way different. Okay, so our generation, our mindset is, man, I didn't want to be like that. I kind of want to keep that open communication. And we have done a good job of that. Believe it or not, we have, both as parents, because we do ask questions. Now, in terms of like the emotional part of it, we lack that. You know what I mean? We think we're engaging with that. But that's not the case. You know, because when you were 16 and we were 16, you know this, obviously. We were in our own zone. We were in our own lane. We were trying to... We were wild. It was a different type of atmosphere growing up. And it was like it wasn't a relatable thing with our parents. It just wasn't, because for them it was what, when they turned 18, it was what, marriage or military or work or college. Those just four
go.
Things.
Get out the door and go.
Yeah, just get out and do what it is you do. You know, where it wasn't, and that was, we're more embraced as a society now. We're more embracive to what our kids are doing. We're more connected because we're growing up with the times. We really are. Think about the video game thing and
how different, you know what I'm saying? Right.
And you asked me one question before, and you said this, where you made a statement. You said, if somebody had told me that we could have our lives in the palm of our hands, you would have laughed at them, right? Think about it now. We're on that same wavelength with our kids. We really are. Our lives are in the palm of our hands. We all know how to use the cell phones.
Yeah.
They know how to do it better.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They know how to do it better and things like that. And they know how to communicate. They communicate differently than we do, but we do know how to communicate with them, because we can be friends with them on their social medias.
Yeah.
So we do have somewhat of an insight where our parents didn't. Like, we can sneak out the back of that, out somewhere, you know. and it's not so much as that now. Now.
But remember, too, that, you know, I find it interesting in why, I mean, I suppose we go down those rabbit holes of why it is this way. But you and I, if you recall, second we were out of school, seventh grade,
right,
we're on our bikes, we're down the road, we're on a skateboard, we're walking all the way to the bridge. I mean, we were just gone till 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Right.
Get home, do your homework, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But your parents barely knew where you were at. But you and I also had
they didn't care as long as we were out the house.
Right. But at the same time, I mean, yeah, but if we didn't show up at 1 a.m.
They'd be a little upset.
But
I mean, yeah.
But there was something different about that approach, to where you and I knew, okay, we got to get home. It's getting dark. Okay. But everything was fine.
Mm.
Now, my kids, when they were growing up, there was no fucking way in hell.
Well,
and my question is, I think the internet plays a role that people don't want to admit, because while there have always been, there have always been creeps and predators and just all that kind of shit, right? I think once the internet let child trafficking and child porn and, you know, predators and serial killers just let run wild, where in a click of a few buttons, you can see anything you want to see. Mm-hmm. I think it has encouraged those that would, because I mean, I'm sure you've seen the videos,
mm-hmm,
where one after another of these, like, remember that Chris Hansen show where those people would show up at a house? It was a staged house.
Mm-hmm.
These people would communicate with what they thought was a 12-year-old girl or a boy.
Oh, the catfish show.
Yeah, like, yeah, where they would draw people and catch these pedophiles. And you go, holy shit. And then, mm-hmm, I sit back and go, now, the Chris Hansen show on Dateline or whatever that was,
right,
now on the internet, there's these guys that literally go out and start pretending to be 12-year-olds just to lure in pedophiles and catch them on video.
Right.
And there are literally thousands of these videos. Thousands of them. And you go, well, I understand now why I have been, in a sense, a helicopter parent. Yeah,
blanketing our children.
I don't know. And these fucking monsters are out there now. Right. And maybe, okay, so to my fault, maybe there was a level where I was too much of a helicopter parent.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, is it worth the risk now, knowing what we know of how many psychos are out there and creeps and pedophiles, to go, okay, I'm glad I made that decision of being somewhat of a helicopter parent, maybe to a fault, but my kids are safe and they're successful in the interim.
And that's a good question. And my only response to that is this, and this is like an onion, many layers. Okay. So us being helicopter parents, what does that really mean? Like, are we too over hovering them, or, you know, that's the term I'm kind of like having trouble, you know, trying to, embrace. Because if I'm a helicopter parent, then I'm a helicopter parent. If it means that I want to oversee everything that he's doing on a day-to-day basis, who he's talking to, his friends are, then so be it. Then let me be that.
Because it's a different world than when you know what I'm saying? There was no internet and phones and all this.
Remember, like, and if you think about it, back in the day, I mean, they're just now solving. You remember in the Tacoma News Tribune or whatever, that they just found the person that took the little young lady from Point Defiance in 1983.
Yeah, yeah.
Let that sink in. So those type of people are always going to be around. They've been around for decades, ages, whatever the case may be.
But I don't want to use that as an excuse to there's always been bad people.
No, there's...
You got to let their wings fly.
No.
Right.
My thing is this, okay? It's all about accessibility. We now know that you're out there. We know you out there. It's just a matter of us as parents keeping you away from that.
Do you know, think the internet played a role in encouraging? Oh, the internet is.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay,
okay. There we go.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? It amplified it. By a thousand.
There you go. Okay.
By a million. You know the power of the internet. The power of the internet just boom. And you know the crazy part is you gave them carte blanche. You gave them this. You wanted this. Okay? Like, whoa. You just gave us another way to be creepier.
Yes.
You gave us another way to get at your kids. Another way to get at your... Look, and I'm sorry, but now for me, I don't do this with my son, which I probably should. I don't get all up in his mentions and stuff like that, you know? And I absolutely do not, you know, asked as a parent to do this, or, you know, I'm not the one to do that. Okay. I'm not a perfect parent. I'll be the first one to tell you this, but I don't get all up in, you know, his friends' conversations and what they be doing. You know, I do ask them, I do ask my son questions.
Sure.
Hey, where you going? I do let him know, hey, you better call me. If you in any type of trouble, you better call me. Don't text me. You can call me, because we didn't have text when we were growing up, right? We had to call your ass.
Remember pagers?
Yes. Okay, but you weren't going to do that with me. You're going to call me first. Don't text me, because I may be, call me so I can hear the phone go off.
Yeah, and I think that has something to say about your and I generation specific. And this is exactly what I was talking about that transition. Because, you know, Sora will text me, And I'm like, I'll call and he won't answer, but he'll shoot me a text. And I'm like, no, I need to hear your voice.
Right.
I think that's just part of our, yeah, the way we're used to.
But you're like, hey, I'd rather hear you.
That's right.
I can hear you better than, you know what I'm saying, that's than right. anything. I'd rather hear from you. At least I know you, because I want to know where you at. If you tell me you over here at the Tacoma Mall, let's just say that. And I call you back, but I hear other people in the background in a bar. Okay, your ass lied to me. Okay, because I'm gonna know that, right?
That's right, yeah.
You lied to me.
And see, that's what's so funny, don't do that.
So I want to hear you say where you at. You ain't gotta lie to me. You just tell me where you at. Oh, I'm at my friend's house. It's vague. No, partner. You better call me. I want to hear your voice. I want to hear them little kids in the background doing something.
And you see what I'm saying is it's a strange approach, because if you remember when I was 17, I moved to Idaho, mm-hmm. and I joined the military. I was already out on my own, and I got back and moved to West Virginia. I moved to Colorado. Mm-hmm. I was just like seeing and I survived.
Right.
But I know how painful a lot of it was.
Right.
And so I have this natural instinct. I don't want my kids to go through some of the poor decisions that I made and bad times. And but then I'm like, they got to do it. They got
to
do it.
They have to go. We all had to do that.
And it's, I can't control my boys. Mm-mm. I get that, because it's funny when I hear them pushing back, and I'm having the same conversations that I had with my dad. You know, I'm like, no, don't do this. And they're like, Dad, you don't know what you're talking about, because you're just an old man. And I'm like, no, listen to me. I've been there and done that. And I remember my dad saying those exact words, son, I've been there. Okay. I've done what you did already 1,000 times.
Right.
You don't understand.
Right.
They do. And now here we are. Remember the song, Fresh Prince? Parents don't understand.
Parents just but don't understand. Did. But they did. They understood.
That's right.
They understood. But again, it's a different dynamic coming from where they came from. But one of my history teachers said it best. History always repeats itself. So everything does go into cycles. So the same mistakes they messed up. Remember, I was 30 when I had a kid. I wasn't 17, 18. We weren't that age. So we were, when we had our children, we were grown. Yeah, we were grown. So we did take something good from that. Our fathers and mothers can take solace in that we were not, you know, children having children.
Sure.
And again, context matters, because people will hear this.
Yeah.
Okay. If you were a 16-year-old having sex and having children and stuff, that's your business. And that's what it was. You just were a young father or mother at the time. That's not to say that you bad people. Okay. So let's just get that out the way.
No, but I think you're right.
Because some people will take that. But
that's
God,
okay. You know? I mean, I think you're right, though. It's good that we'd already had experiences and matured to a certain degree. Mm. I think if I'd had my three boys when I was 16, 17, right. 18, things would be a whole different world.
Right.
You don't have that experience and wisdom yet to go. And even at 30, when I had my first son.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm glad that I had already experienced life a little bit. It gave me some kind of foundation.
Right.
So then I could apply it. But you're right. Had I had my first son when I was 18, 19 years old, when you're still young and stupid and you don't know what the hell's anything.
Yeah, because you're still a kid yourself.
You know what I mean? You're just barely out of the house.
You're still a child.
That's right.
Yourself. You're not even, and if you're 16, you're not out the house yet.
Oh, hell no.
Yeah, you're absolutely not out the house yet. And the one thing I'm happy for now as a parent, you know, with my kid being 21, that his focus is basically in college. He didn't have the desires, the social desires that his other friends
had. That could have clouded his,
you know what I mean? Like, he didn't have those social desires. So I'm very proud of him in that regard, you know. And if he becomes a parent later on in his 30s or, you know, or in his mid to late 20s, whenever he's ready, I'm not encouraging him to do it. Don't do that. Do your thing first, son. But, you know, at least he'll have that peace of mind knowing, okay, he's somewhere first. At least that's his track.
Yeah.
And at least I can be the one to say, hey, I'm glad that I was able to instill that in you, you know, to some degree. You know what I mean? Because you don't know, like, I don't know what it's like to be a parent at 16.
Nah.
Neither one of us experienced that. Again, not to say that that's a bad thing or whatever.
Well, I don't think it's a wise thing.
You know what I'm saying? But it wasn't a wise thing.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying. I mean, I'm sure there has been a 16-year-old parent that has been a positive parent. But I think you're right. I don't think it's common.
Mm-hmm.
Most people that had kids as kids,
right,
it was a fucked up situation.
Right.
It was chaos. And it has something to do with the 70s and 80s where people were just fucking right and left, right, and you had teen pregnancy.
Yeah, and speaking of teen pregnancy and going on to that, MTV, remember that show?
Yeah, yeah.
16 and pregnant. And
that's right.
It seemed like...
It was almost encouraging. It.
Exactly, because that's what I was going to ask you. Do you feel like that show encouraged more?
That show to me, because it just seemed, because remember, for you and I, TV and commercials was relatively, it wasn't new. You know, the 40s and 50s where they had brand new TV and the Honeymooners and,
right,
you know, Brady Bunch and this kind of stuff, it wasn't like television when you and I were kids, where it was just constant advertisement and I feel like looking back, social engineering to a certain degree. So then you had that show on MTV. It almost, to you and I as kids, we thought, oh, I guess that's just normal.
Right.
You know, because we weren't being told that, no, this is a rare situation.
Right.
But because we saw it on TV and everybody loved MTV and it was the cool thing and, you know, Bill Clinton and all that, just MTV was the stuff. Right. And so we just accepted, well, I guess people are just doing that.
Right.
And but then looking back now, you know, you went to Wilson and I went to Stadium.
Right.
And I think I can remember maybe two kids in high school when we were kids that were pregnant.
Just two? Wow. I mean, the stadium wasn't.
No, but MTV made it sound like this was just a common thing.
Right.
It wasn't
right.
like okay, this, like you just had a flood okay, of teenage, you know, pregnancies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, then I guess you could break that down and go, well, was this trying to promote this? Or were they trying to open eyes to a certain situation?
Right,
I
don't know. Right.
I feel like it was a really underhanded way of promoting it. And
right,
you know,
right.
It just,
and
look
and,
at where we're at now. Shit's yeah, just yeah, all yeah. ass backwards.
Yeah, it is. And it's funny to me because, like, my son, you know, my
knock
my
you back,
son,
bro.
You know, and this is funny because, okay, just a little background. My son, side of his family came from, they were from the country. Okay. I'm going to be very, very blunt with that. They from Aberdeen, Hopium, Washington. That's about
Nirvana's
as country
from
as you
can get. Kurt
exactly.
Cobain. Yeah, yeah.
And she was, to me, that's as country as you can get. And they, and to some degree, his family embraced that. His mom's side of the family embraced it. May she rest in peace. She's, you know, but, they embraced that. And I was like, no, we're not doing that for our kid. No, because they ain't no going to be fucking around in our house as, you know, our son being 16 and we're going to encourage him to go out and have a baby.
Yeah, yeah. Not
at
that age.
The fuck you think this is? Not in my, especially not under our roof. That's the one thing I can honestly say, be happy about my dad. You know, like we were activists as kids, whatever the case may be. But the one thing my parents both said, you will not be making no babies up in our house. The only two people making babies up in this house are people that are paying bills.
Yeah.
You don't do none of that. So that's not going to happen. Now, having said that, you know, now transitioning to the question I asked you about MTV, I'm like, it almost, like you said, encouraged. And you said that very, very,
it
very clearly.
It made it look cool.
It made it look cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But do you realize that, okay, you had a generation now that was following this and they were like, dang, this is cool. And, you know, it changed. Things were different. Hey, come on, Art. You, at one point, they were encouraging these people. Hey, audition for our show. They didn't say audition. Okay, so I don't want to get sued by MTV. I don't know anybody. But still, it seemed like, go ahead, come on down and come to our show and tell us your story.
Yeah.
And at that point, it just seemed like you had a bunch of kids, just people out of, you know, couples out of nowhere. Bank, you know, making kids.
And almost
to be on that show, to be recognized for that 15 minutes of fame.
100%.
And for what?
Well, it almost sent a message that it's okay. If you're going through this, this is, like I said, it almost felt like it normalized it. And I'm trying to remember what it was like being 14, 15 years old, watching that crap on TV. And I call it crap now. At the time,
we weren't 14. We were in our 20s and 30s when that came out.
Was it really?
Yes, we were in our 20s and 30s. You know, I mean, I do remember that much.
What was that show? The show was
It was called
16 and
Pregnant.
And Expecting?
16, yeah, no, 16 and Pregnant or something like that.
And I thought that was when we were in high school, though.
No, we weren't in high school.
Oh, interesting.
No, because them kids, no, think about it. Them, if that was the case, their kids would be like in their 30s now.
Hmm.
They about, some of them, I think those kids' parents are like in their late 30s. Mid to late 30s. Look that up. I mean, that we
got that's the what I'm gonna do. 16
we got
the and in
16 and
pregnant. 16 and pregnant. Let's see. Yeah, let's
look
see
that up.
That
yeah,
was here.
We got Google. Hey, we got Google to find everything for us now. Go
dude,
figure
that's
that.
A trip. Yeah, you're right. That was 2009.
Think about it.
Yeah, see?
And my son at that time was not was 6 years old at the time.
So what am I thinking of? There was something when we were kids. It was beginning to, man, we'd have to look it up. But I mean, MTV, when I was watching MTV,
It was just videos, bro.
Yeah, it was R&D.
That's what it was.
And then music.
And then later came the reality shows.
What
was
the one?
Let me ask you something. I'm going to ask you a question.
Sure.
Reality TV. Okay. The reason why I'm going to ask you this. How did you feel about reality TV? Now, I'm doing the air quotes on this. How did you feel about how it changed our views?
Because that first one was called
Real World.
Real World.
Yes. How do you feel about that?
And I remember at that time, everybody was so drawn to that because it was a new experiment in television, right? And then I think that was just, well, it was. It was clearly just the kind of, the gate to all the shit that we have now.
Right.
And the stuff on TV now, you know, this is what I was talking about earlier about our parents. If our you know, remember when my dad specifically, when you and I would watch Married with Children, my dad would have lost his shit.
Mm-hmm.
When he saw that we were watching Married with Children, there was an episode where Al Bundy talked about picking up a couple of schoolgirls and rocking the pleats
off
their skirts.
Right, right, right.
And my dad was just livid. He turned off the
TV.
That's
why you came to our house and watched
it. Yeah. And I mean, that show was just great. But that was also a cutting edge show. That was something, you know, before that it was Cheers and Seinfeld and Brady Bunch
and Cosby Show,
all that, right?
World, all that,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Family Matters. And here was those edgy shows that were beginning, but excuse me. Those things, the things that's on TV now is just, it's just filth. There's so much filth now. Everything has to be about fucking every waking moment. You can't have just a show without somebody fucking in it.
It's entirely changed.
It's just
television
got tired.
Has changed.
There's no creativity anymore.
Changed.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's what, and I really mean that. We know people fuck. Okay, I got it. But do we have to have it every episode of every show? Something's got to be about sexual innuendos.
This is where you're an old man now. Sex sells, remember?
I get it. And that's all it's about. It's about
sex
generating
sells.
Ads and money.
But that's been the mantra of television. People say, oh, no, it's not. bullshit.
But do you remember,
you too? You tell me something that don't promote sex and don't get a million views on your Facebook and on your Tinder, anything like, you're going to get a million views.
No, you're right. But look,
and it's funny because, oh, well, we're, you know, you got these people up there. Oh, they wrong for you. Wrong. But you're still watching it.
But there was nothing wrong with when you and I were growing up, like, Cheers. A lot of that was implied. There were jokes, right? You didn't need the visual, hey, we're dropping our pants and getting it on.
Right.
You had the jokes about it, and Sam Malone was always kind of schmoozing up on some chick or something.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
You knew what was going on,
mm-hmm.
but it, in a way, it was still innocent, and that was okay. It was implied what was going on.
Right.
Now you have to have...
We have to
take it up a notch, and I'm just tired of it. It's gotten to me boring. There's no need for that.
Right.
Again, like I just said a moment ago, we all know we fuck.
Right.
Everybody has to. It's just the nature of human beings.
Right.
Do you need to have it in every episode? No, you don't. And now we're implying it into our cartoons and kids shows. And
right.
It's just gotten so off.
But there's
so
a lot
the
of things on television that we don't. That doesn't need to be brought into our face. There's a lot that doesn't.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, and you know, this is what's funny, okay? Again, sex sells. A million percent, sex sells.
That's it.
But you know what's funny? Like, they talk about this cancel culture that these people, whoever... Who are these people, number one? Who are these people
Who are these people that came up with it?
Okay, please tell me who.
I'll tell you who the cancel culture
is.
Who is? They're the bitter. They're the picked on. They're the weak. They're the ones that feel left out. They're the ugly. And I don't mean that to be disrespectful, but those that are not considered the standard hallmark of beautiful,
mm-hmm.
but they're the nerds. They're the queers. They're the geeks. They're the picked on. They're the weak. They're the spoiled. They're the ones that feel left out by society. Suddenly we gave them an amplifier and a megaphone and power.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones going around now seeking revenge. That's what it feels like to me. It's these people that were shit on for so long. And to their credit, right? I get it. You and I grew up and we remember those who were picked on, beat up. I got picked on. I got fucked with.
There were bullies out there. Yeah, we had our bullies, you know, share bullies.
And then now it was bullying is wrong. Okay, I can agree with that. But we went beyond. And now we gave all those people power. And those powerful, the Bob Ferguson's, our governor, and I won't spend too much time on that. But all those twerps and geeks and weak people. That there, I feel like there are two types of people. There are those that got picked on and bullied and recoiled and mm-hmm. became really bitter and angry people and never recovered.
Right.
And there are those who got bullied and picked on that said, that's never going to fucking happen to me again. And they
right.
made something of their lives. Bullying, mm-hmm. unfortunately, has its place in society. Now, those people that got shit on and they never recovered. Now our society has given them, like I said, a megaphone and power, and they're seeking revenge on society. That's what it feels like to me. And they just have so much fucking power to where if you don't say the right thing, you don't toe the line, we're going to shut down your business. We're going to fuck with you. We're going to destroy you now.
And that's funny you say that because...
Real quickly, remember the movies that we saw were like a nerd or a piece of shit or a tweet?
Or Revenge of the Nerds, two.
No, but remember like where you would always see the nerd that then was like a Bill Gates, became a millionaire, and now he's got a helicopter and a Porsche.
Yeah, he became
this like,
billionaire.
He's like, fuck all of you now, yeah?
But, you know,
I didn't get the chick in high school, but now I can have anybody I want.
And those stories were a little bit more whole. And I get it, you know, the message they were sending in that, you know, that was meant for the bullies. Watch you, be careful who you fuck with.
Yeah, yeah.
More or less, be careful who you fuck with, because this might be the person that you might have to kiss their ass.
One day, yep.
Yep, you might have to kiss his ass. This dude might own the Walmart.
That's right.
You didn't beat him up, and embarrassed him and shamed him and to all degrees.
And now he's got
you. Guess what?
Yeah.
You working at Walmart, buddy. you work it, or you might be on the board of directors somewhere for another company, and he didn't bought your ass
that's
out.
That's right.
And you got to kiss the motherfucking ring. That's just the truth. That's just the truth. But what I'll say to this, you know, in talking with people, and this is funny. Some people say, oh, those are Christian people doing that. I'm like, whoa. Now, I'm not the most religious person in the world, but when they say that, okay. And somebody said something to me about that, and they said, oh, it's just these good Christian people that go to church, these church-going people that have the message that they're sending, saying this to, like, oh, these, we're the ones that are with the megaphone out. To that, you say what? That it's the Christians that are doing that.
Well, I mean, we could one day get into the whole religious, discussions about that. I mean, there's a clearly, in the past 10, 15 years, an attack on Christianity.
Oh, not and, according to social media and the news.
I'm just going to say that
because,
not to cut you off
from your answer, but I saw something that said, oh, 1 in 4 Jews are being, bullied or messed with in some type of way. And I was like, really? I don't know that. I don't recall that.
I think it depends on the region of the country, of the earth you're in. I mean, if you're in the Middle East, yes, Israel is surrounded.
No, here in the United States.
In the United States.
That was a commercial. Yeah. Watch on TV.
Sure.
One
yeah,
day
yeah.
So.
In Israel, well, on college campuses, yes, right now. But nationwide, no. I mean, historically, you look at the Holocaust and what Jews literally went through. 6 million of them murdered, thrown in ovens, experimented on, children cut in half. I mean, just horrific shit.
Mm-hmm.
They just treated literally animals by a dictator, Hitler. Horrific. We've all seen the movies. We've seen the footage when you and I were in school. The Holocaust is unbelievable. And then the Americans now that, they're old men now talking, coming from World War II, going, we didn't even know that was happening. And we showed up and we were like, holy fuck, we didn't know what was going on when we opened that gate. And you saw all these people that were just withered down to bones,
mm-hmm.
and literally being tortured, mm-hmm. and babies being mutilated, and just the putting drills through his skulls. We've all seen those videos. So the Jews in, 1930s, 1940s America or Europe, and then look at what they've overcome. Right. So they went through living hell, where I think there was that story of the little girl, I think she was 6, that escaped one of the gas chambers.
Escaped and the gas chamber or the one of the encampments?
Well, the gas chamber was in the encampment. And
okay,
she,
so was it the...
She was in the gas chamber with her mom.
Oh.
And her mom was holding her naked. They were all naked because they would make them strip down to humiliate the shit out of them, put them in these rooms, and they would spray them with water, making them think they were just taking showers, and then gas them.
Right.
And the girl remembers her mom. Now, you got to imagine, and this is tough to even say because you then think of your own child. And forget that it's Hebrew, Muslim, whatever it is. These are human beings.
Right.
And you just think of a mom holding her kid and her last words to her child that escaped this room where there's no place that God's love can't find you.
Right.
When you're about to die and your child is hoping you can save them. I mean, you take that to such a deep level of humanity and fear and all that of holy fuck, I've got people with guns marching me into a room and I've got my little child and I'm helpless.
Right.
So that's one story of just on and on and on and on again. And then look at what came out of that historically, what the Jews have done in American society. They've overcome that.
Right.
That complete destruction of their people, 6 million of their people murdered for political, religious, whatever reasons you want to call it. And not just murdered, but horrifically more murdered. And then to overcome and become in these positions of power all across their country.
Mm-hmm.
So then now and which I'm kind of circling back to what you were saying earlier about Christianity, we have this new idol of Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
The Christians, they're just da da da. And then, you know, most of those people have never been to church. And you go into church and it's awkward but polite and people are friendly. And I don't know any Christians across the world that are sawing off people's heads, that are murdering people, that are, they have their opinions.
Now, I mean, it's different.
No, we're not talking about Constantine times and historically and this kind of thing. Okay. The Crusades and all that kind of stuff, which the Crusades historically were an answer to Muhammad's era. Muhammad was just a man. And when the Muslims were attacking Christians, because remember, I mean, you know, we want to get into this, which I didn't want to dive too much into this, but
No,
Muhammad is not an old figure. That was what, 9th century.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's very young historically.
Mm-hmm.
Muslim is a very, very young religion.
Right.
It's like very, you know, and then moving forward, then you have the Mormons and all these kind of things, and we can get into that later, but.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that one later.
Christ, if you want to get into the principles of Christianity, Christ never says to attack anybody. What we do know is human beings are a problem, and human beings will latch on to something to justify their actions.
Right.
So if a Christian kills somebody and says, I'm doing it in the name of God, but that wasn't God that told you to do that.
Right, right.
That wasn't Christ that told you to do that.
Absolutely.
Christians, I mean, if you're going to straight up Christ, was turn the other cheek, you know, wash their feet, be polite, be kind. So you look at American society right now, Christians are an easy target because Christians don't retaliate.
Right.
Now, you remember, what was it?
You say that they were easy targets, but.
I mean that if, like, I say, fuck Jesus, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have a barrage of Christians come and saw your fucking head off.
No, absolutely.
You remember that reporter that was in fear of her life because she drew a cartoon of Muhammad and she was getting death threats. And literally she was like afraid to go to her car because people were waiting to bomb her and saw her fucking head off.
I didn't hear
about
that. But
then you go off to, and then you go down to the rivers of Jordan during the Obama presidency, where ISIS was literally marching Christians out to the beach. And with a blade, and I don't recommend it to anybody listening to this, but me and a buddy of mine, Brian, we forced ourselves to watch these videos of these people being knelt down and having a very horrific blade saw through their neck and cut their head off. And watching that was a mistake. See, you just go, whoa. I mean, this is another person doing this to another. Remember that American reporter? I can't remember his name right now. The one that the ISIS took out to the beach and they put video.
I don't remember that.
Oh God, what was his name? Anyway, he had to give a speech, and just before they sawed his head off, and then the MSNBC CNN, they blocked all that out. But I watched that video of this American reporter getting his head sawed off, and it's not like. You know, like a whack. This is like a cut, and you see the tongue hang out and all this.
Right, right. So it's graphic in nature.
My point is that you show me one video now, today, and everybody can justify, well, what the Crusades did.
It's a little bit different.
But it doesn't. But either way, it's humanity doing these things to each other, which is just appalling.
Right.
And it's just so sickening to think that this is where we're at in a world where you do have to worry about there's human beings that still are Neanderthals that have no problem murdering you for political or religious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even know how we got onto the subject.
We're just talking about our youth.
You were talking about the Hebrews, the Jews.
No, but it wasn't about that. It was about what people and how perception, more or less, and getting back on track and the bullying aspect of everything, where the little man finally becomes the big man and stuff like that. And how people have the megaphone.
The megaphone, okay.
Christians come up. Oh, they're ones that are speaking against some of the things we see on TV. And I'm like, okay, but remember, we also, we touched on sex sells, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, Jeff, I didn't mean to dive down a road here.
No. And bleep, bro, we get, when we get, you and I get together and we do this, which is very rare, few and far between, because we have our different lives and
yeah,
and
busy and all that kind of stuff, right?
But this is friendship. This is 33 decades of friendship at its finest. We this is what we do. Okay, this is what we do when we get together. We you know, we catch up with about our families, our kids, and our mothers and fathers, and this is the true. You know, if people want to know, and people will know, this is a friendship that goes back for so long. And when you say three decades, you're like, what?
Isn't that mind-boggling? Yeah.
Like, you know you old when you say three decades. You know your half ass a century old,
bro.
Half a century old, 30, 50 years of age. 3 decades of that with one person that you have known for that long, of that amount of time.
Well, and then it's also a reminder, and one thing that, you know, you think about when we were young and we never really process is that, and now I'm thinking about it more than ever, and I guess maybe this is just a natural progression to getting older, but we all have an expiration date.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to die.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And and I think we're at a point now where we have less years ahead than more. You know what I mean? We're going, oh shit. So
no, but you know what? I will say this, and this for the people that's listening in or whatever. I will say this, and to quote all these people that are health nuts and stuff like that. If you take, you eat your, what did Hulk Hogan say? Say your prayers, eat your vitamins, and stay healthy, you'll live a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, that don't work for my people. I'm just throwing it out there. Okay. High cholesterol, fried chicken, all that. That's what we do. Okay. All right. But other than that, you know, if this friendship that we have, man, and people need to understand this, and I'm going to say this to people in general. When you try to play the race card, people, if you don't hear my voice in here, I am black. This is,
everybody knows.
Okay. If they don't know, they will know now. I am black. And so if anybody ever said that if anybody ever said that to this man right here that he was prejudiced, they'd have to come see me.
Well,
you'd have to come see me. Anybody on them comments, you want to make a comment, direct them towards me.
And that's the thing.
And you don't know. And that's why I say don't keep racism alive. Do not keep racism alive.
And I'm so glad you brought this up.
Because this is 33 decades of friendship.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm on a, you know, we've grown up with the race, right? Racist. It's always race this, race that. I haven't seen people in a long time. I'm sick of race. There is one race, the human race. Now, we have different pigments in our skin. We have different cultures. There's nothing different between you and I other than the melanin content in our skin tone and who our parents were and all that kind of stuff. But there's
a couple of differences.
But what I'm saying is, when I see somebody from India, somebody from China, somebody from Ireland, somebody from Scotland, somebody from Africa, I'm like, yeah, we are a species. We are a human race.
Right.
We literally are defined by our culture.
Mm-hmm.
How we grew up. How do we grow up differently?
Yeah, big difference in culture.
And that's what I'm saying. So I'm so sick of the government constantly just keeping everybody riled up on race, so pissed off. We're different. You're different. You wouldn't understand. You wouldn't understand what it's like to be black. You wouldn't understand what it's like to be white. You wouldn't understand what it's like to be China. Well, let's stop being that way.
And I'm glad you said government. And I'm going to preface
and media
and the media. you have so much power within the media and the government. You can change that. If you really want to push a narrative, a positive narrative, they y'all could. Can do it.
They could, but they don't.
But you refuse to 100%. Because that's the thing. You want to divide this country. And for what?
It generates nobody money.
Can ever answer that. For what?
Well, it generates
you
money.
You want to divide the country, though. Okay, and what did they say? United together, divided we fall.
100%.
So you want to, if you're the government or you're the media, you want the fall of this country.
Well, if you
want the fall of this because that's your narrative that you are that's pushing. The goal.
Yeah,
if that's a goal.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you were a student of. I don't know if you were a student of Malcolm X, but, you know, he said that, you know, beware of the white liberal. You know, and when you watch time and I, you know, you may be familiar with Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell was just a brilliant African-American. He's a brilliant American. And that just kind of get on point to what I'm saying here about dividing us. He's a brilliant man. And I'm so sick of the Don Lemons, the Al Sharptons, you name it, that constantly make everybody think that we're different. We're only different by our cultures and how we grew up and who raised us and who taught us. You know, we're racism, which I'm so sick of hearing racism. We as children are instructed by our parents. And as we just talked about earlier in this episode here, just when we started talking, is that this is all taught. The hatred, the bigotry, these are things communicated, expressed, passed down to the children. Some children absorb it, some push away from it. But either way, inherently, as a human being, there's a way of looking at it. I get it. You know, if you want to get tribalistic, the tribes, you had, you know, say 30 to 50 people, and they were a very small, tight-knit community. And then somebody from the distance arrives with another 30 to 50 people. These people, they don't know. They look different. That makes them cautious, especially when you're in a state of survival. I get the human genetic inherent motive of tribalism. And I don't think tribalism in itself is inherently negative. I don't believe that at all. I understand where tribalism comes from. You had to protect those that you knew. You had to protect your, especially if you go way back, you know, go, let's just say 1,000 years. Tribalism itself is not inherently dangerous or negative, especially now when the earth, the earth is, you know, society has become so much smaller now, especially with the internet. Mm. And you can see anybody from any culture in any country like that,
yeah.
You know, in a snap. But I understand.
And I'm
gonna
say this. Well,
hold on a second. So, because what I was saying is that I think that it's still in our DNA to protect.
Right.
And so when something comes across that you're not familiar with, mm-hmm. or that seems strange or odd, you naturally want to protect until you can gain trust. And there, I don't think, again, being tribal, being nationalistic, I don't think that's inherently negative. It's now who wields that power.
Right.
And as you just said a moment ago, the media can be just so destructive,
mm-hmm.
because they have an agenda, they have a goal to keep us separated and show how tribalism, racism, destructive. You know, when you hear, you know, like I said a moment ago, when Malcolm X is saying, beware of the white liberal, because when you now watch and you listen constantly to the white liberal that says, my gosh, they need us to help them because black people don't know how to get a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is the intent going, okay, well, you've got a good intent, but you're being racist by saying a black man needs you to show them how to get a driver's license? Right. Fuck off.
Right.
That black man is just as much inhuman as anybody, but they have sold everybody that Republicans are racist when they're the ones being the fucking racist, saying that the black man needs the white man to guide them into life.
Right. And I'll say this to the liberals out there, whatever the case may be. Like I said, I'm not a political. I don't have a degree in political science. Not
I don't think
all.
You have
you
to.
You know what I'm saying? But I have a degree in human nature. And
it's called wisdom.
You know what I'm saying? And that's exactly 50 years of wisdom. And I will say this. And when Malcolm X said, beware of that. And because he basically said that that's a very the liberals are being disingenuous in downplaying your the black man's mindset or whatever. There's the same liberals that were in NFLs and in that the owners that own teams just play. You understand? Just be a player. I'll pay you millions of dollars or whatever. Just play. You ain't allowed to have opinion. Fuck that shit. I wholeheartedly believe, hey, you can do both, whatever. You can be an owner one day. Encourage those people. Because it's just like you're basically handicapping that person.
You're sending a message, though, to everybody.
Yeah, and it's a bad message.
It really is.
It's a very, very bad message. 100%. You know, and it's like,
you need me because you can't do it on your own.
And you're demeaning that. And then when somebody kind of comes in and tells you that, bro, you hear how you're saying that? Because context matters.
100%.
Context matters.
And that's what killed me about what Obama, when he said, remember the kid that got shot by the cops, the black kid that got shot by the cops, and Obama goes, huh? What frightens me is that could have been my son. I was like, fuck you. No, it could not have been your son because you're a millionaire living in a private gated community.
But again, I'm not defending him. I don't know the man. But I will say this.
He's in a different world than you and I.
Yeah, he's coming from like, hey, you know, this could have been. But he's saying, but I think what I took from it was like, he's absolutely correct. My son, if, and I think he was saying that if I was growing up in the South Side of Chicago, that could have been my son. If I didn't change my life the way it is now.
But that's not what he said.
No, that's not what he said.
Right.
But I think that's the picture he wanted to paint for everyone to know.
I think Obama had an opportunity to bring us together, and he failed miserably. He separated us.
I can't say that.
He kept saying white people are evil and all this kind of shit.
Well, I don't remember the man saying that in any of his speeches. I don't remember that. But I know that, you know, which you said was that, oh, I think that was his message that he was sending. The message that he was trying to convey. Like I said, I don't, you know, I'm not no political dude. You know what I'm saying?
No, I follow you. I hate politicians, period. I'm so sick.
Politicians are politicians.
And he is a politician.
And they
it's
are.
Worth $40 million now. You and I don't got because, $40 million. Dollars. What did he do for me? What did he do for you?
You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know what politician, but anybody in politics, you know, whether it's who we got now, Trump, right? Trump, you know, people saying all this stuff about him and whatnot. And I'm like, for all I know of this man or know about him, like it doesn't, I'm partial either way. Okay. When he said that his policies that he wants to change, okay, I'm with it. Now, there are some things that I can disagree with the man
100%.
On.
100%. He annoys the shit out of
me. A lot that I disagree, you know, in his demeanor and stuff like that when he comes. Because he gives you a lot. Like you said, he gives you a lot. This is the thing that gets me, though. And I'm like, if he's running this country as a business,
which is what
it should be,
yep.
Then run it as such. But do it without having to say anything, because that's going to be your biggest.
Yeah,
that's going to be your biggest detriment.
They're
going to
jump on it every time.
Because you're a lightning bolt, a beacon for everything that you're going to say. So just don't say nothing. Just show us. Look, my granddaddy said, I can see better than I hear. So just show us. Don't shut the fuck up. Don't sit up there because you don't know anything about, oh, well, these people, you know, and because where he lost me at is when he talked about the Colin Kaepernick thing that really pissed me off. All those sons of bitches, you know, sitting up there doing this, that, and the third, you know, those sons of bitches with the flag or with the American flag or whatever, bending their knees, oh, fuck, you know, that type of thing. I was kind of upset because that was not Colin Kaepernick's message. He said, I'm kneeling down for police brutality against black. Sure. And other people they took it and ran with it and did something else with it. He was not disrespecting the American flag. And then he ran with it and said, oh, those sons of bitches that are doing, shut up, Trump. Just run the fucking country. Do your thing, but don't do that.
Yeah.
Because now that's where people can come in and say, oh, well, you racist. Don't give them that ammunition.
That's
you didn't
my
have
thing.
To say,
yeah, and that's
it.
Don't
do it.
Give them
just
the, right.
Run the country the way you did economically, and then show us that, hey, this is what it is. This I'm going to change for. I'm going to make sure that America has. Okay, so let me ask you a question. We've been talking for a minute now. Tell me, what do you think about the 25%? The tariffs.
Well,
what do you think about that? Well, I have to ask you that.
Let me process that for a second here.
Oh.
So the tariff thing, I mean, I'm no economic professor to any stretch of the imagination. I mean, a little bit of college I took, and I had a little basics of economics. What I do see is that Trump appears to be a transactional president.
Okay.
For example.
Meaning, give me an
so
definition
for example,
of that. Give me a definition.
So I'm going to we'll just throw out some digits, okay? I want 80. I know I'm probably going to get 30. Okay, let's look at it like this. I want 50, okay? And forgive me, everybody listening. I want 50. So I'm going to tell them I want 80. Okay, and when I get 70 in the process, I'm happy. So it's always this, I'm going to go extreme and push my weight. It's that Queens, New York mentality, because that's where he's from. Okay. And from my understanding, listen to Dan Bongino, it literally is a Queens, New York thing. You and I don't get that. I mean, we didn't grow up in Queens. We're not like the Bronx and the Brooklyn kids and the, you know, you get the Manhattan kids and all that, where the Manhattan kids that got all the money. You know, I grew up in Tacoma compared to Bellevue, right?
Right.
You got to puff up your chest a little bit. You got that Tacoma grit. So I understand what they're saying about, now granted, Trump grew up with $1 million and all this kind of thing, but
yeah,
he still
that,
was from
that,
Queens.
Yeah, that kind of helps a little bit.
No, it sure does, but it's still a mentality when you're growing up.
Right.
You got to puff up your chest and talk a lot of shit. And then when you understand Trump and what he's done so well is the art of the deal, he knows how to go in strong. And so now if I threaten this and I do this, I mean, look at what's already happened. He went after Mexico and said, I'm going to do this with you guys with tariffs. Fuck it. And everybody went, oh, my God, you know, the tariffs actually affect the American consumer. And that is true.
Okay.
So, but then so he says, now a tariff is not, it's like, okay, well, if you're going to, the tariff is, we're going to, for all the products you bring in, we're going to tax you essentially.
Right.
Well, then the corporations then that are buying China's products now go, well, fuck, they're going to raise their prices. It's going to affect us. Here's the two options. We're either going to raise the price to the consumer here in America, or we're not going to buy your products anymore.
Right.
That scares China, Mexico, whatever country it is. Mm. Canada has had tariffs on us for decades. Nobody talks about that. high tariffs on our products. Okay. Nobody talks about that.
All right.
So Trump's going, well, this isn't fair. We keep providing military protection. We keep solving problems all across the world, and we're paying for it. Why are we getting involved in your problems and us paying for it on your tariffs? Mm-hmm. We're always shelling out money across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting bills when we're providing services. Well, how come England's not getting involved now? How come you aren't protecting Ireland? I mean, whatever the is, it's always, whatever the crisis is, it's America will foot the bill.
Right.
Trump comes in and goes, this is bullshit. We've been paying this for 20, 30 years. Why? Then you find out all these slush funds that have been going to ridiculous programs, billions of dollars. I get what Trump's saying is going, you're taking monies from Jevony and Sean and giving it to other countries without their consent.
Right.
Why are our taxpayers paying all these bills? Enough of this shit. We're not doing it anymore. So NATO, you know, all these countries that are involved, no, you're going to start footing some of the bill. So then all that shit now, circling back to what you're saying about tariffs. And again, I'm not an economics major, but I get it. He's transactional in that I'm going to threaten, okay, fuck you, Mexico. You're going to continue to let this shit go across the border. You're going to let China bring through our Mexican border now all the fentanyl that's killing our own people. Cool. We're going to raise tariffs on you for all those products that we purchase, and here's what's going to happen. And it's going to happen on April 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So he puffs up his chest. Queens, New York. Fuck you. This is what we're going to do. Get ready. And then suddenly, Mexico, okay, here's what we're going to do. We'll put our own military at the border. We're going to stop the illegal immigration and the fentanyl. Okay, cool. Tariffs aren't going to happen. It's not calling a bluff. He's going to do it, and they know he's going to do it.
Right.
And we're in a world now that when you have people like Biden that are just pushovers, and you look at third world countries where you can say it's sad that this is what exists, mm-hmm. but if you look at third world countries where all they understand is might and power and fear,
right,
you have to show that. Mm-hmm. And they suddenly back down. Now, again, we can argue all day, you know, well, it's sad that these countries are like that. Now, okay, fine. But if Trump knows that this is what they respect and this is the posturing we have to do to get results, Trump doesn't want to go to war. He's done it a million times. He's trying to stop wars. Did you know in the first 4 years of Trump, remember when he was president, not one war? How many wars started breaking out while Biden was president?
Yeah, that's true.
Because when they don't respect the U.S. president, because, you know, the U.S. has been, like you said a moment ago, a beacon for 100 years.
I would say more of a bully, but go ahead.
Well, fair enough. It's an image.
We were like the big brothers.
Right.
Hey, somebody's picking on you, we're going to
get involved.
But that's the only problem I ever had. Living in the United States.
We shouldn't
States.
Be the military police. I agree.
We shouldn't.
I'm sick of that
and
shit.
And that's the one thing I
think
always
that's where Trump
like,
is now, though.
You know what I mean? And we have to. But, like, we're the only country that has military base in every single country.
And Trump is cutting those. Isn't that amazing?
Do you think that's a wise thing? We're cutting military bases in.
Well, here's my position.
And I have to ask that now.
Well, no, and here's my position. I think we've reached a point where the conventional has no longer worked. The conventional has been a shit show to taxpayers for decades. We have been stolen from. You and I bust our ass every fucking day. We go out there and grind out a paycheck. We're scared about our power bills. We're scared about feeding our kids, giving our kids a leg up in this really corrupt society.
Mm-hmm.
We work our asses off and they take, whoa, you better, hey, whoa, whoa. You didn't pay your tax. We're going to take your house. You're always under that fear of taxes and being threatened by your government. And Trump's coming along and going, world problems, I'm done with it. The world is fucked up, and I'm sick of us getting involved in this shit. My philosophy is, well, number one, war sells. It makes a lot of money, the war industrial complex.
Right.
And number two, this is my sole position right now. Until you come to my shores,
mm-hmm.
fuck off. I'm done with it. We have too many problems in our own country right now that we need to solve.
Absolutely.
If you step onto our beach, we're going to beat the shit out of you.
Absolutely.
But I'm sick of going over there and picking fights and our CIA and these co-op operations, whatever you want to call it, and covert operations, and you know, taking people out of political power, putting our own people in there. You know, the Panama, what was that? The Manuel Noriega and all that kind of
Manuel Noriega.
You know, all our that. CIA, our government has been involved in so much of this shit for political power reasons. I'm done with it.
Right.
I say, hey, world, I'm sorry. You got a lot of shit going on, especially in the Middle East. Deal with your own shit.
And that had to do with like what we signed in 1877. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? And that's 100%. The sad part. Like, you holding us to that type of standard from 1905 or something.
No, I'm tired of the U.S. government taking what we work for.
We should never, ever have to get involved. I've never been one like, I'm like this. Okay, that's just like my across the street neighbor having a problem with the next door. I don't give a fuck.
Now
let them motherfuckers fight.
Now,
if they fighting, let them fight.
Now, well, let's
none of my fucking business. Now, when they bring it to my front step, oh no, we got a problem now.
Well,
you're bringing it to me.
Well, the argument would be though that but Jevony, you saw your neighbor attacking your neighbor's child. Do you step in and go, I'm here to help? Because you can.
Okay. Now, context matters. Okay. Now, you asked that question. Context matters. Now, when it comes to children, everybody has a soft spot for children. Everybody
does.
We should. Protect the children and the women, whatever. Okay. That's the soft spot. That's the Christian thing, whatever the case may be. Okay, obviously, as a man,
you want to help,
and
that's
protect,
your knee-jerk
whatever.
Reaction.
Okay. I don't want to get involved in a business, but if I see the grown ass man attacking a child, yes, I'm gonna say something to his parents and say, "Hey, protect your kid." That's what I'm gonna do.
Well, when does Jevony physically get involved?
Now, when I get physically involved. Hopefully never, you know.
I'm saying,
honest,
you see a grown man beating up a kid, when do you step in?
That, I'm like, okay, I might pull the man off. Okay, if this is just a child, I'm going to pull him off. That ain't none of my business, but I'm going to pull him off. Like, look, man.
Because you know it's right.
Okay, it's the right thing to do. I don't know what this. Now, if the child's like 2 and 3 years old or 4 years old, below a certain age, sure, I'm going to step in. Now, if he's like 13, 14, I know you an asshole. You a badass kid if you done did something.
Well, there's always nuance, right? So,
okay.
Hold on one second.
We're just talking new, but I'm just saying
let me use your example, though.
Context matters. So, if you're saying a helpless child of 2 or 3 years old is getting attacked by, okay, yeah, I'm going to get off the fucking kid. I'm going to beat your ass.
So use that now. This is what I mean by politicians and this machine of buying to extract money out of you.
Right.
They will use that narrative because of your human conscience and you care about other fellow human beings.
Right.
And they'll go, look at this massive country over here. Mm-hmm. They're attacking that little country where women and children are dying.
And
we're going to
again,
get involved.
And that's where you're. That's where.
But you and I go, wait, hold on a second.
We ain't over there.
No. So you were saying, but
we're not over there.
How many people, though, their heart kicks in and goes, well, yeah, I don't want to see that happen. That's what I mean. The governments use the human nurture effect to justify money.
Whatever you want to call it, Sean, I'm going to tell you like this.
It's to justify money.
As a human being, as a grown-ass man in this country, look, I do not. Care what I've never cared what has I have, and I shouldn't probably say this, but I'm gonna say this anyway because I can. I don't give a damn. First off, I don't know what goes on in other countries. They fighting, that's a mystery to me. Okay, as long as they don't bring this fucking war to my front door of my front, don't care.
Well,
you guys can fight among yourself. Just like them countries, like in Germany and stuff, like the First World War. Now, that was okay. Korea and South, North Korea and South Korea. Who gives a fuck? Let them fight. To me, that's it. To me, and this is just personally. Okay, they can fight fairly, whatever. If you want us to, you want to buy some arms from us, go ahead and buy some arms from
us. That's what I was going to say, is that now, you, that's you what Trump's thing is.
You can buy some guns from us to bust one on South Korea. Go ahead and do that.
That's Trump.
That's where I'm going to lead. That's where all our involvement should be.
And that's where Trump is going, is that it's like, if you want us to help, you're going to pay for it.
No, they're, and no, instead, they're at, no. But when and you instead, say help, we just it been means using sending our troops. Up. No,
no, that's,
here's the guns.
No, that's what I'm talking about.
Right.
But instead of, hey, here's taxpayers, $400 million. Here's $4 billion. I'm tired of funding shit for other things. You know, this whole, which, you know, we don't have time this evening, the whole Russia and Ukraine thing that just continues on and on and on. Trump's trying
bro,
to.
Bro, they fighting.
That's what I'm saying.
So, I don't give a fuck what goes on in Ukraine or Russia. Because they don't give a fuck about what go. You got,
but they love yeah, our
don't
money.
Don't get me started.
They
don't love get our me money. Started. They don't get me started.
Money. And I'm and right
I,
there
I,
with you,
and,
man.
And you know what? I have no problem with Russia, Ukraine. I got plenty of friends of those descents. I went to school. We all had the exchange program. Friends with them.
Yeah, yeah.
But as far as what goes on over in your country, don't give a fuck. Y'all speaking the same fucking language over there. That's the truth. Y'all speak the same fucking language over there. Y'all ain't speaking the same language over here.
And this is what I love, man. We got I got a few minutes left here before we got to dial back. But, man, you're 100% right. I agree. I'm sick of us getting involved in everybody else's shit. And I think that's what Trump's position is just going, okay, we're going to quiet this shit down. We're not going to use taxpayer money to fund wars across the globe.
Okay.
And I'm 100% on board with that. But before we close out, I did want to ask you. Let's take this down. Let's just wrap
I'm sorry. Hey, if it, no, no, if no. I got because, too see, loud, brother, I'm sorry.
No. We just,
I'm sorry.
I really want to get into this with you, but you know,
we'll do it on another time. Hey, right. Ask me on the show again.
Next episode.
Ask me on another show. I'll come and I will.
Oh, we're
going to
spend time here.
Okay.
I want to, because folks can't see this right now, but did you see this? How badass is that?
Oh, no.
Yep, and I'm going to be framing this
Logan,
tomorrow.
March 3rd? No, are we talking Wolverine?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
look
no,
at that picture.
No, don't do that. I love it. Where's mine? That? Where's mine at?
Oh, no, you don't get one.
I don't
so,
get
folks,
one.
What you can't see is...
Fuck if, you, if, mean, if, I don't get one. I'm your best friend of three fucking man, decades. Been, I don't get one.
I've been looking for this picture for a long time, so what everybody can't see and is that it's a picture of Logan's hand with his claws coming out and the little girl, Laura, from the movie Logan. It's just her hand. They're holding hands. Mm-hmm. Isn't that badass?
It is.
I found that online. I was like, I got to get this thing. So did you... Yeah, I mean, you know, we all watched the X-Men movies. They kind of started spiraling out of control with Marvel and all this crazy
and
shit.
We will get into that next time.
But did you like? You must have liked that movie, Logan.
Oh, I did. I absolutely.
It's just
perfect. That was a beautiful one.
There was nothing wrong. There's no way you could pick apart that movie.
Right.
And the little gal and the whole thing and Wolverine. I mean, man, watching him fight with the. Whatever was happening with his body because he was failing, he couldn't regenerate anymore.
Because of the adamantium and how it ate him up. But, you know, it's funny because and they were saying, you know, you see the 30-second vignettes of what do you call those things? Those TikToks or whatever? They show, oh, if Wolverine was... skeleton was made of
adamantium
made of vibranium instead of adamantium, what would he be like? What would I'd be watching those things. You go to YouTube and you'll see the YouTube shorts and they show they would show what adamantium or what Wolverine would be like, and like it raises a lot of questions for those nerd types that really are into it, though. But I really kind of was like,
you know what, I didn't pick up though on the Logan movie. Like, Thatcher had to point it out to me. It wasn't the adamantium that was poisoning him.
Well, yeah, that's...
There was a Thatcher. That's what I thought from the Logan movie, is I was going, oh, that metal finally was catching up and fucking with
yeah,
him.
Yeah, but I mean, but it, how was...
No, Thatcher said he rewinded. There's a part in the movie where that guy with the robot hand, you know, the, mm-hmm. they were in the...
Yeah.
He talked about how they actually put this chemical in everybody. And I went, oh, fuck. And I'm not even saying it right now. Go back and watch the movie. And that guy explains.
I will now.
That, you know, that was partial to, you know, the whole thing with the, you know, Xavier.
Professor killed Xavier, all, yeah. The way that they were handled.
Dude, that movie was just perfect.
No, I'll be honest with you. My favorite movie out of all the X-Men series was The Days of Future Past.
Was it really?
That was my all time favorite.
Why is that?
Days of Future, because, man, I tell you what, when he went back to, like, because they showed the you know, with what happened to the future of the X-Men and all the Marvel, basically with the Sentinels. And I was like, oh shit, this shit is fat. And then, like, how Mystique was the main one. That they were, you know, that they got the DNA was the strongest out of all of them because it killed them all.
That's right. Yeah.
Mystique's DNA was able to.
Watch that one again.
You gotta watch. Oh my goodness! And I was like, whoa! And that, watch it again. But yeah, that was one of my favorite ones. And thank you to my man here, Brightburn.
Ah,
motherfucker, boy, you shouldn't have had me watch
that. Can you believe there's a part two coming out?
Don't tell me that.
Yeah.
I finally watched that. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Whole different interpretation of what if Superman was pure evil, right?
When you told me about that, it took me years to watch it. I didn't watch that until last year, Sean. And let me tell you, fuck me up. After you told me, I was like, yo.
I told you, man. And everybody listening, by the way, if everybody's seen our previous episode, I'm a Superman junkie. And when that movie came out, I was so happy about that because it really opened up that, well, if Superman's pure good, what if he was pure evil?
I watched the end of it where they were showing, what he did. I was like,
the evil Justice League showing up. I was like,
bro, I shouldn't have never have watched.
Part two's coming.
But I should have watched it when you first told me about it. You were like, hey, watch Brightburn. Watch it. Kept putting it off. And the one day I had time to watch it, I actually watched it. And I was like, this shit fucked me up.
That was such a great movie.
I said, you know, and that's the one thing about you and I that we've always had the same taste in movies, series, television. We've always had that in common. Over the years, and you know this, so tell the people about that.
What was so great about Brightburn for me was that it was just, number one, it was just entertaining, but it really opened up your mind to, we've taken this story of Superman being the pure, he's sent from another planet, and he's mm-hmm. really kind of the, you know, the Jesus figure to, you know, guide humanity into better things, and then now what if? What if it was just complete opposite?
Right, and that answered it right there because that boy was kid. I was, what,
dude? And when he like he's being a creep and showing up at the girl's room.
Yeah, going
and
up
like,
the girl's room,
whoa.
And stuff. And then he had the mat. He had that burlap sack over his head. I was like, what the fuck is
he
doing, man?
And here's what killed me about that is when there was like this moment where you were going, okay. When the mom is going, I'm so sorry.
Just pleading with him.
And then
I said, oh, no.
And then
he
you
about
thought
to kill
for a minute.
Anyway.
Yeah, and you thought
he about to kill her anyway.
Man.
It don't matter.
Because remember, she had
mercy on nothing. Well, and you just saw.
What did she have with her? She had that knife or something?
Yeah, because she was going to stab him with the stuff that
was. When he was coming around, he was going to be sad and he loved his mom. And then when he saw she was going to try to kill him, then it was like. It was
but you know what? That reminded
me
of some parenthood from some of these parents, and you know who you is, okay? Sitting up there protecting these serial killers you got for kids.
Yeah.
Let me stop.
I'm telling you, man. Hey, Jeff, we gotta have you back here in a couple weeks.
Please do, man. I would. Hey,
if you've heard on our show,
hey, look,
Brian,
press like. okay? Do that for my mans, okay? Do that for my best friend, 3 decades long. Press that like and subscribe button for him. He's the truth.
It's been a blast here, Jeff. And again, as you know, Brian is also my partner on this show. Okay. And next time he gets together, I'd love to have you so we can all just kind of have a big long chat. And we'll get together here again soon, bro. Shout out to him. Jeff, thanks again so much for coming together, man.
Thank you, brother, for having me. I appreciate it. And I thank you for letting my voice be heard and letting my stuff out there and you know, and letting and from people out there, like I said, if all those people that have something negative to say about this man, come see me first. Come see my ass first, and then we gonna talk.
Love you, bro.
All right, love you too, man.